reading from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, chapter 4, text 88. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prabho Priyatamanam Tu Prasadam Paramam Vina Nasidyati Priyaseva Tatanam Nafalapyapi. Without the unconditional mercy of the Lord's most beloved friends, a devotee's loving service can never succeed or bear fruit. Commentary. By now, Hanuman's ecstasy in unalloyed prema has awakened to such an extent that he feels stirred to go see the Pandavas at once. And he's about to propose to Narada just that. One can never become a recognized servant of the Lord. In other words, one can never enter the rasa of dasya without the blessings of perfect devotees like the Pandavas. Even if one externally makes a show of such service, one will not reap the fruit of satisfying Krishna and enjoying transcendental ecstasy. Pure devotional service proceeds completely under the authority of the Lord's beloved devotees. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Jaksurumlatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Vipa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Ghaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Newburgh, upstate New York, at the site of our annual festival. Quite a wonderful festival yesterday, beyond my expectations. It was just well organized and just peacefully absorbed, and that's the process of bhakti. If you can create an atmosphere which facilitates the absorption of the mind in Krishna, then the natural attachment or sentiments of the heart to love Krishna arise from the heart. And it creates a very dynamic environment because everyone is feeling Krishna conscious and you're affected by your environment. And one of the main things you're affected by is the people that you're with. So that's a wonderful dynamic. It doesn't start that way. I always said, well, it's such a difference between the beginning of a festival and then a little bit into it, because in the beginning, people are coming, traveling, different experiences, and there's certain something that enters and spiritualizes. Just the process of chanting and hearing is just so powerful. And we had quite an interesting variety of experiences in Krishna consciousness. Nice kirtan, of course. Of course, that children's festival is very wonderful. Children are engaged. They're happy. The parents are happy. I spoke briefly, maybe I said 20 minutes, but probably it was more like a half hour or 40 minutes. I spoke on the psychology of kirtan. And then Bhakti Vishwambar Madhava Maharaj spoke, and he's an advanced soul, quite absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and in English we have it, we call it a one-track mind, but I've actually really seen what it means. What he focuses on, he's absorbed in, and he's focused on different things in Krishna consciousness. Main thing is his spontaneous worship of his deities, Kanai, Balai, Krishna, Balaram. Absorbed in Shastra, I've seen that. Absorbed in learning verses, studying music. But somehow here, he's been here for the last month because they have about 5 or 6 acres of land, and he's been absorbed in gardens and building beautiful gardens. And it's so interesting because he's a real Indian type. He's Westerner, but he's a real Indian type sadhu, very detached and renounced. And, you know, but, you know, he gets into these gardens, I mean, researching them and orchards and so many things. So after me, he gave just a lecture on gardens in relationship to Vrindavan gardens. And, you know, the spiritual atmosphere it creates. And he was passing out all the books on gardening that he's studying, and then implored the people to go out in the gardens and help him plant the trees or whatever he was doing. And I was surprised how potent it was, how many people went out and started digging. And then Kanamrita came, and born in the Hare Krishna movement, we lived in India sometime studying music. Very good-hearted and effulgent and talented person, and she couldn't stay so long, but she wound up staying way into the night. It seems like she was really enjoying herself, and the reciprocation was wonderful from the devotees, and I think she really appreciated it. And I went to her concert the night before. She's extraordinarily talented. The talented in kirtan has two divisions. It's the heart and the expertise. And the expertise is born out of the heart of the desire to please Krishna. And that's real music. Even in any sphere of music, the music must be born of some sentiment. If it's just done for business or for success, you know, it's one quality. But if it's born out of a legitimate emotion in the heart, and you have some talent, it's a very, very extraordinary experience, especially when the sentiment is devotional. And I really bond with her on a level because, you know, she has that sentiment for Vrindavan, and I lived there for so many years. And mostly when people that are kirtaniers come into an audience, they have to sing some simple kirtans. But she's, you know, has an expertise. She can sing these beautiful bhajans and explain them to people. And devotees, their hearts were really melted. It was a wonderful experience. And then Rina Anandamaraj spoke. And I was very well. I think people really appreciated his class. And I remember one point he was making of what purity means. You know, he says, you know, you come to a certain commitment or decision, but there's still a momentum that you carry from your nature. And he described it. He said, it's like, it's a good analogy, and he's quite brilliant in that. You're driving on a highway, and, you know, you're going really quickly, and you realize you're going the wrong way. Then you decide, I've gone the wrong way. I have to turn around. You just can't spin the wheel. The car will crash. You have to drive, slow down, find some place to turn then, and then make your way back. So it's a very nice analogy in terms of a devotee. You know, the real thing is that commitment to go in the right direction and then carefully pursuing it, understanding that you're going to carry some momentum from your life of sense gratification, what to speak of how the Krishna consciousness movement started when people were going 150 miles an hour in sense gratification, in drugs and sex life, in the mode of the hippies. And, you know, then they surrendered to Krishna. And many of them turned around too fast. And there's disasters when you turn in the right direction too fast. It was just an interesting, and his jokes were great. And I introduced him, after thanking Conamrita, and then I introduced Rita and Anmarj. I thanked him for coming and, expressed appreciation for his dedication to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu under the authority and auspices of Srila Prabhupada. And I explained how different devotees offer different things in Krishna consciousness, and I explained how he offers his genius. A genius, according to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is one who can present things in newer ways, and he's quite brilliant. And I especially expressed appreciation for his use of comedy. Connoisseur of that. I really like jokes. So I explained, I just shared with the audience one of my favorite ones. And it was when I came to Miami to visit him, he picked me up at the airport, and it was the time of the Zonal Acharya era in ISKCON. Those of you know, the world was carved up. And there appeared to be a competition to do things bigger and better, and everyone was making big projects. And that was kind of the mood. And Rita and Anuraj was one of the Zonal Acharyas. So we're driving down. Oh, I think I told this joke the last time. And the phone was muted, but Gail assured me she was laughing. Anyway, I'll tell it again, but probably you know the joke. But going on Collins Avenue, if you know Collins Avenue at that time, it was just hotel after hotel with old people sitting on chairs of, one age after the other, 60, 70, 80, 90, all in a row. And he looked at me as we're going. I was actually stunned. On each side, they're just in chairs, and it's like in a row, going down for miles. And he looked at me and says, he did it good. He said, here in Miami, we have the largest changing bodies exhibit in the world. Anyway, it was just wonderful, and it was just a wonderful experience to be with all the Vaishnavas. So that, and then this morning, Jayad Waitamarj right now is giving class. Unfortunately, I miss it, and I'm deeply sorry for not being able to come on yesterday. I did send a message out the day before. Maybe all of you haven't gotten it, or maybe you're not on the list of the announcements as for the classes, but I really hate to miss the classes. I think the success of the classes that I have an audience that hears regularly is the continuity. I try my hardest under any circumstances not to miss the class, but I realize I was defeated. I was in a foreign country, and I was coming from one program to the other. I wasn't sure when one program would end and one would begin. But I knew it was 5 in the afternoon. I knew at that time I'd be in the road, and I wouldn't even have any possibility to call or et cetera. So excuse me. So we're kind of beginning it again, and maybe I even feel a little bit lost where I was. But let's continue. It's Hanuman's glorification of the Pandavas. He's, of course, to Narada, who's searching for the topmost devotee. And the spontaneous devotion beyond the rules of the Pandavas, their devotion is they just think of pleasing Krishna. And that's only in their, they're just thinking of pleasing Krishna. And that's the only thing that's in their mind. And that's the highest devotion. There's nothing external. And when you see Krishna as God, then there's obligation and there's fear. And that weakens the devotion, makes it a little bit external, even on the perfectional stage. So in Narada's search now, he's coming to the Pandavas, and it's the first example of devotees that are touching this degree of spontaneity where there's no fear. And there's no obligation because there's a sense of equality. And you just do what pleases Krishna. And if it pleases Krishna, then you accept service from Krishna, even though Krishna is God. just like a father, out of love for the child, he accepts service from the child. The child may put the father's shoes on his head and bring it to the father, you know. So out of love, he accepts all kinds of service. So Krishna likes to experience varieties of love, and that requires that Krishna puts himself in a position that's equal or inferior to his devotees. You can't experience parental ras from your devotees unless you become their child in an inferior position. You can't experience friendship unless some equality is allowed. So in that spontaneous love, the Pandavas are sometimes engaging Krishna in a subordinate way, as Arjuna did as his charioteer. And when Hanuman is watching this, he's thinking Krishna is God. He must be bewildered because he's completely forgetting his position. And then comes to that conclusion that perhaps it's even a herb that the Pandavas gave Krishna because he's forgetting himself, that he's God. And then the conclusion is he's controlled by the affection of the devotees because that's Krishna's happiness. And coming up, then he was glorifying Bhishma, because Hanuman, that's his younger brother. But by saying, he is my younger brother, he's distinguishing the position. He's my younger brother, pointing out the extraordinary nature that he's so advanced. He's more advanced than he glorifies Arjuna. And just this unabashed, enthusiastic, uninhibited, be a better word, glorification of the Pandavas from Hanuman, which is pinpointing speciality of their devotion, that it's come to this level of the speciality of devotion, that it's actually come to this level of spontaneity. It creates an enthusiasm. When you hear, hearing it has such a powerful effect. You know, you hear, and if you hear, it's interesting, if you hear constantly about how a person is bad, it will create an impression in that consciousness that it's bad. So if you don't know that person, so you hear, you read on the internet, you read from people, this person is bad, this person is bad. And then you start to associate that person with those qualities. It just has such an effect. And then when you associate, sometimes you meet the person and you say, wait a second, this is not what I heard. It's kind of different. Our guard is down. So we're hearing. It has an effect. We tend to hear with some type of submission, or we hear with some type of eagerness when people are criticized due to the material condition of life, which seeks superiority. So if competitors are put down, there's a certain kind of inborn joy of that if you're not actually trained in mind in a cultured way. So in the same sense, when you hear the glories of someone, especially when you already have some attraction to them, it really creates an enthusiasm. You know, if you hear the glories of someone, just like I may speak about a particular devotee that you don't know, in India, you have slight faith in me, and I say, oh, this person is this, he's nice, etc., you should meet him, he has a... Then it creates an enthusiasm. And what's enthusiasm? It means there's a memory that's created that this is good. And when that memory becomes strong enough, it impels one into action. That's what addiction is. Addiction is strong memories of pleasure for things that are ultimately unhealthy for the condition of the mind, even though they give temporary pleasure. And if those memories are strong enough, they impel you into action. It doesn't surpass, but it goes around the intelligence. It doesn't go through the intelligence. We want those impressions, those memories of the pleasure of serving Krishna so powerful and strong that without thinking about it, right from the heart, We just serve Krishna and want to serve Krishna. So, but addiction is like we want to do something that's unhealthy, and the memories are strong. So this kind of dialogue, when you hear from a devotee about the glories of another devotee, very, very soon it creates very powerful memories in the consciousness, attachments, memories of pleasure, that this is good, this is good. And then the result ultimately with Narada, who already has that, memories of attachment for the pleasure of serving Krishna, the pleasure of serving devotees. And it's being nourished in this book, as hopefully it's nourishing us when we are listening to it. But with such an advanced devotee, where that's his prime motivating force, he already has the impression that I like devotees, but then when he gets the impression that this person is a devotee and it's of a certain caliber, it creates such an impression in the mind. So he decides that he wants to go. And he understands why Priyatamam of the most beloved Prabhu of the devotees, Prasadam, Paramam, their supreme mercy, which means unconditional mercy. What can supreme mercy be? But mercy, which you're getting the best thing, although you have the least qualification for it. And without nisidyati, you're not successful. You're not successful. You could not bear fruit. So this theme comes up again, and he's realizing it. Without the mercy, and the mercy is hearing from that person, seeing that person, your service cannot succeed. There must be something that comes from above, and it's the bhav or mood of bhav or mood of sentiment. It's the bhav or mood of sentiment to serve Krishna. It's communicated to you. And Bhagavad Gita, one of the main verses, because this, what is this verse saying? It's saying, without the mercy, you can't succeed. Without the mercy coming from above, something that's inspirational in devotional service. Because devotional service, it's just not an activity. He says an external show will not reap the fruit of satisfying Krishna. The service has to be with a certain mood of devotion, and that comes from above. And that's what actually pleases Krishna. That's why Govardhan is Haridasya Varya, why Govardhan is the best devotee. Govardhan is the best devotee because Govardhan gives his whole body for the service of Krishna, but he gives it with devotion or emotion or with a sense of love. And when I was thanking Kanamrita for coming and just sharing with us such an incredible little devotional concert, I said that in the Bhagavatam itself, in the 10th canto, it gives two qualities of good kirtan. It's from the heart, and it's done expertly, but the expertise is born from the heart. So you may have talents, and you may be able to do certain things, but it has to be done with love. And when it's done with love, you get the intelligence on how to do those things even better, which is why the greatest art is inspired by God, actually, around the world. The greatest art so far has been inspired by God. In that regard, before I get back to this verse, as someone who communicates Krishna consciousness, I took some interest in the debates between theist and atheist. Expressed to you before, it was generally some sentimental or fundamentalist person that can be ripped to shreds. But I recently saw some debates between an Indian Catholic intellectual conservative intellectual, Dinesh D'Souza. And I saw him tear to pieces even people like Christopher Hitchens and this guy Dennis Bennett, who's considered one of the four, he's a professor at Tufts University. He's considered one of the, or Brandeis, he's one of the, they consider him the four horsemen, the four pillars of atheism. And somehow, I forgot what the argument was at the time, but it also did relate to art, how so beautiful things are done when the spirit is its devotion. So Bhagavad Gita says, Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhiyogam tvam yenamam upyanti. For one who worships me with love and devotion, I give them the intelligence. So there's mercy, there's reciprocation. And mercy is the reciprocation that comes from above, and the affection that comes from above. And the main form of that affection is inspiration and instruction. So that's essential in devotional service. There has to be empowerment, because the real vision to serve Krishna and to share Krishna consciousness, the real vision, it's not a material thing. It's kind of like, you know, you drop a contact lens while you're attending a concert, and then you have to find it. If someone can point to it, then you get the right idea. And it's like that in Krishna consciousness. It's just not an intellectual thing. How to advance? What's the next step in devotional service? How do you spread Krishna consciousness? There has to be a connection from above. And then a flow of mercy and transcendental knowledge that's even beyond the person who's the bestower of that knowledge. It flows through that person and inspires him. So Narada Hanuman is pointing out an essential point that's not only essential point to this particular purport or section of the Bhagavatamrita, but it's an essential point from the very, very beginning. You have to be linked. You have to be linked. Tadviri pati patena pari prashnena sevya upadekshanti te jnanam jnani nas tatvadarsha. You've got to be linked. You've got to surrender. You have to inquire. You have to do service. You have to create the conduit to those above to get this higher inspiration that allows one to bear the fruit of devotional service, which is the satisfaction of Krishna in terms of the devotion in which it's done and the offering itself that's made with that devotion. So now Hanuman says, Tasmad Bhagavata Shreshta Prabho Priyatamochitam Tattano Gamanam Tesam Darshana Slayane Tata. Therefore, O best of Vaishnavas, most dear devotee of the Lord, let us go together to see the Pandavas and take shelter of them. So Bhagavat Shreshta Priyatama, twice, the best devotee, which is Narada, he's blessed on an equal level with the Pandavas, but that doesn't prevent him from seeking their association. It doesn't, because when you are advanced in Krishna consciousness, you're searching for God, and the best receptacle for God is the hearts of his pure devotees. And that doesn't end when you achieve perfection. There's a constant nourishment of spiritual sentiments. And that's the glory. That's the glory of the spiritual world. The glory of the spiritual world is that it's flowing with rasa. And the same consciousness of bhakti that you have there in purity, which means you're very humble. You're seeing everything is superior to you, and you're opening your hearts for instruction, for mercy, for direction, for love. Of those who are beloved friends of the Supreme Lord. Never in Ayodhya did the Lord disclose what he now reveals. In the district of Mathura known as Dvarka, countless varieties of supreme opulences and sweetness, one after another, which Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods can hardly fathom. These glories expand the love of his devotees. So Aishwarya and Madhurya, Parama, Aishwarya and Madhurya, so this is the spiritual world. So the spiritual world, he said that there's gradations of devotion, and there's the gradations of places that facilitate that devotion. That's there in the material world. There's gradations of devotion. Someone may revere you as the high court judge. And there's a higher love for your family. And to facilitate the different manifestations of devotion or respect, there's a different environment that's suited to facilitate that. And part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita wants to show in a progressive step-by-step way that the highest love, and therefore the environment that most facilitates love, the highest love is the devotion of the residents of Vrindavan, and the greatest facility to help one express, nourish that love is Vrindavan. So here, it's a progression. Now, Ayodhya, that's a glorious place. Vaikuntha is a glorious place. But let's go, Hanuman says to Narada. Let's go to this place where we have this supreme love. And the varieties of this Aishwarya, the glory of God's power, and the varieties by Chitram Vindasha, numerous of the Madhurya, of the sweetness of his personality, which cannot even be fathomed by the demigods, is there, not any place else. So let us go to this place. And there, these glories, they expand the devotion in the heart of the devotee. Both the Lord's Aishwarya, and there must be Aishwarya even in Dvarka, naturally in Dvarka, it's opulent, personified, but it's in relationship to God, it's God. It expands the love. It's like the queen, she sits on a throne, she has the palaces, it expands the love, but the love will ultimately be expanded, or will expand it to its maximum degree if there's an exchange of personality where you feel that love from a personal love from that person who you worship. So never before. So you go to that place. So go. And so now Narada responds. Sri Narada Uvacha. Ah, Kim Uktam Ayodhyayam. Iti Vaikuntato Pina. Utishto Tishta Tat Tatra. Gachava Satvaram Shate. Sri Narada said, ah, what are you saying? Something unseen in Ayodhya? It's not seen even in Vaikuntha. Get up, my friend. We shall go there at once. So Narada is ready to go. And he expresses some distress. Something that I missed. I want this. And then he says, Utishta, Utishta. We know in any type of language, repetition of a word is usually a typo or a defect in writing, except where it expresses exceptional enthusiasm. And again, this is how you succeed in practicing Krishna consciousness. In the Yoga Sutras, which I'm studying, it says yatna. One must endeavor to practice. And what is that endeavor? That is our vigor, our enthusiasm. It's an expression of our devotion. When you have devotion, you are enthusiastic to chant. You're enthusiastic to go to the temple. You're enthusiastic to serve devotees. And what is this enthusiasm? It's the attachment you have for the pleasure of serving devotees, for the pleasure of chanting Hare Krishna, for the pleasure of being selfless in heart. Utishta, utishta, get up, get up. Wake up, get up, get up. Let's go, let's go. Just like in the Bhagavatam, when Sita Goswami told the sages of Amishranya that he heard and realized, Shonaka Rishi said, I heard and realized what Sutta explained. No, when Sutta said that he was there when the Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadev to Maharaj Prickett, and he not only heard it, but he actually understood it deeply. Sutta Mahabaha, oh, Sutta. You don't cross them out. It just expresses that word. You don't edit it out. It expresses the great enthusiasm. Sri Prikshit, now we're going Prikshit's talking to his mother, because there's different levels. Sri Prikshit Uvacha, Atak Shanam, Shashvatha, Banumam Darya Sagara, Jagada Naradam Natva, Shanam Vidhi, Vimrishyasa. Sri Prikshit said, Hanuman, the ocean of sobriety, then sighed for a moment in a brief time and thought. He broke down to Narada and spoke. Commentary, Hanuman's strict loyalty to Lord Ramachandra made him reconsider what he had been thinking. He concludes that to go off running to Dwarka, leaving aside his regular worship, would violate his exclusive devotion. So he bows down to Narada to ask forgiveness before saying no to what Narada had suggested. So he has his own relationship with Krishna. I'm not sure, you know, because it was last Sunday, the class was, I couldn't come on the class, but most of you I know. If I don't know you, you know me from hearing me speak. And just wanted to share with you my experience in Moscow was just, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And really, Krishna had some plan. I had no thought that I would go to Moscow. I don't have that memory of great pleasure for traveling. Rather, the memories of pleasure I have is just staying in one place. That's what I like to do. So I don't really try to travel that much. Sometimes I have to. But I was in Govardhan last year, and because I haven't spoken in a week, it's been 2 weeks since I spoke. I don't know what I told, but I didn't tell you before. But it's just a nice story about the glories of Vrindavan. And a friend of mine takes tours of people to India, and this was a group of people who understood Indian culture and Indian philosophy through the study of Jyotish from an astrologer who spent some time in Moscow, Israel, and kind of other places. And my friend somehow helped this person, so he was able to advertise in this astrologer's mailing list if anybody would like to see India, and he got a great response, about 20 people. He's done this before with me. But, he called me up, and it was Kartik, and I'm in my room, and I do my Namvrata, and that's the time where I say, the rest of the year is for others, that's the time for myself. But he calls me up, it's a nice group. can you just speak to them? And I said, certainly. So they came in my room. It's all those mud walls down there in Govardhan, kind of mystical and nice. About 20 people sit in the room, and I explain sacred space. What makes one place better than another? I relate that to Govardhan being the highest place, you know, in Radhakund. And I give them some instructions about how you should do parikram, because they wanted to go on this walk around the sacred mount. So these were established people, many, especially the ladies, were very well dressed. They took off their, and one lady had gold high heels or something, and they walked around. I couldn't go with them. It was Govardhan Puja. They came back. They saw me. They were a little sore, but they were quite enlivened, and they wanted to do the rest another day. They asked me if I can take them, and I did, and they were just going to walk around. I asked the person leading them, how about we'll do a little kirtan? He said, yes, they can do. They did kirtan. They had a completely mystical experience. They just came in the right mood. Sometimes when people come the first time, they have a better experience than the second time. Because the first time, they don't know where it is. They're dependent on, they have to be humble. They can't control in a foreign environment. They have to depend on the tour leader. And in that humility, again, it's from the humility, it's the verse we discussed. They get the mercy of someone who's a higher realization because of that humility. And something comes. They're given the eyes to actually see. And when these people came back, I mean, some of them I saw in their eyes that something special happened. And anyway, it culminated especially in one lady who became very enthused, but practically all of them became devotees. I met them in Moscow. One day they came to see me, about 15 people with some new people that were going to go. They're going to go back. Exactly. And they set up for me some beautiful programs there in Moscow, rented out. Eventually it was just given by someone, but initially they were going to rent out this nice apartment, and somehow we got an apartment towards the middle of the city, and they rented out a hall, and it was superbly, dispassionately, and devotionally just organized. And 50, 60 paying guests a day, many, many repeats, and, you know, it's just so rewarding. You know, you see how potent this philosophy is, and people become devotees. Just to share with you, one lady, one letter I got from one lady who was not a devotee at all, pretty, you know, these are established people. She said, "I can't find the words to express the appreciation and gratitude for your coming to Russia. It was a great experience for me to visit your classes, to see and hear you talk, to talk to you. Thank you very much. On Tuesday, May 19th, when we had the last class with you, I came home pretty late because it takes about an hour and a half to get from my place to the center of the city. Even if it was a little late and time to sleep, I was very impressed and excited by the class and the music we heard that evening. I explained everything I heard to you to my husband, Dennis, and we started to talk about God and divine, and we talked almost the whole night, and I saw my husband was very inspired by this conversation, and it was very enjoyable and useful for both of us. I believe you brought spirituality to my family. I think this is amazing, and thanks for asking my sister to give me the special rosary bead. Sorry for my English, not that bad. I didn't practice for a long time. She gave it to me on Thursday, and it's what I needed. And I got this lady just bought this japa meditation, and it's the experience of the classes, the internal spiritual feelings. I'm on the right way to start meditating. Nadia, very nice. Many, many people like that. So it was very edifying, and I also, the devotees in Moscow that were there, I was in invited to all these programs on the other days. And just so nice to see how Prabhupada's mission is attracting the intelligent class of people. And anyway, I just wanted to share with you, and that's why I couldn't give class. We'll stop now a little bit early today, but does anybody have any questions?
Maharaj?
Yes.
It's Mahamuni. I'm a little congested. I apologize.
Okay.
Let me know if it doesn't come across properly. I have a question, and if there's time, maybe a really brief comment.
Okay.
And they both have to do with Confucius. I'm studying Confucius right now for a class I'm going to be teaching, and it's really edifying. He's really wonderful, and I think you'd like him, although I don't anticipate you having time to read Confucius. But anyway, he says at one point that he's talking about how hard it is to develop whatever good character, and he said as long as you desire it, you're practically already there. And it just reminded me of what you were talking about today, how our enthusiasm is really the bridge between where we want to be in relation with Krishna and where we currently are.
Yeah.
And one thing I've seen is that, I don't know, I feel like often I'm not enthusiastic in the same way that I used to be. And it seems to me to be a mix of a lot of things. Some of them may be genuine non-fanaticism, but in other cases, lethargy and all that kind of other things like that. And I guess I'm wondering...
And lack of nourishment. I mean, you don't grow if there's no food, you know, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and also...
Anyway, there's
a
lot
of... lack of
there,
but, I think you're right.
But you know, it's... We haven't supported the congregation of people to the degree that's necessary. Like you say, you know, not just some formal church, but some type of thing that actually satisfies one's needs with the proper, you know, retreats, association, counseling, inspiration, examples, et cetera. Yeah, okay.
I guess I'm just wondering, you know, for people, and you know, I mean, my impression is many of the people who you preach to are in situations like mine where we're practicing Vaishnavas who, for whatever reason, aren't particularly close to any institution, although we might have some sympathy. I mean, my understanding is that the best way to develop enthusiasm is to hear. And I think your classes really inspire me, and I'm really grateful for helping me.
Yeah.
What other ways would you suggest, you know, practical ways to develop enthusiasm? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it seems, you know, there's always the ideal, and it very rarely exists. So I think you first got to construct the ideal. There's a center there of spiritual life, or people, not a center of people living, that are exemplars. And being exemplars, they have extraordinary relationships in spiritual life. They're accommodating and empowering to others. They provide facility for people to nourish by empowering them, seeing what their talents are, engaging them in Krishna consciousness so they can become absorbed and provide the proper education and spiritual experiences. And ideally, in every place there's devotees that, you know, if that's there, you get nourished. It's just like this program here. What I saw, I mean, I was pretty amazed myself, and I'm pretty critical of, you know, critical in a way that, you know, I have a certain standard. It was nicely organized, and I saw people come, and there's such a difference between the beginning and the end. And the power of nourishment of being with many people who are enlivened in spiritual life, who you can have affection for and relationship with. So I guess you just got to see how much one can get that. Okay, so one thing, that's why I do the classes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's a personal sadhana that's supposed to maintain the nourishment. Yeah. Doubts prevent one from moving for nourishment. So there has to be a facility where people's doubts get clear. With that faith, then there has to be ways that they can nourish it. Of course, the church, Catholic Church, you know, it's been doing this for many, many years. It's made a lot of mistakes. It also has a lot of things it does well. As Borijan said, no institution in the history of the world had so many saints. No institution in the history of the world had so many sinners. No institution did more to spread Krishna consciousness, spiritual life. You know, no institution did more to discourage people. No institution had so many celibates. No institution had so many devotees. You know, so it's, but, you know, what they do well, the retreats, you know, where people can get rejuvenated. You know, understanding the fact that the way modern society exists is people are often put in situations and association that's draining them. You know, so different types of retreats are needed, and the appropriate types of one. You know, Prabhupada had that vision, you know, a place of pilgrimage where people can come to, even Prabhupada, even in America, you know. So I don't think, in one sense, it's rocket science, but it's not rocket science. You know, there's a way that faith gets nourished, and the main way is by association with people who have that strong faith, and by societies of devotees who reciprocate on the level of that faith, and by different mechanisms and intelligent ways to communicate that faith according to people's frames of reference. You know, for some people, you know, just have a lot of loud madungas and a passionate dance and come there and take the Sunday feast, and you know another person, a little something maybe more refined, you know, done in a more cultured or proper way. I example of Kunja Kishori. You know, she has family and she works, etc. And she goes to the festivals at 25 First Avenue, where Yajna Purusha is. What I see, it's just a really inspiring. First of all, you come in. She's a professional. You know, when a person is a professional person or competent, there's two things that can ruin your enthusiasm. One, when you go to get nourished, you're the one that has to organize everything. Or yeah. Two, when you go to get nourished, right, you see how poorly things are organized and it disturbs you, you know. But here it is. She could go and just go. She said, like, she felt like a new devotee, and just go and just relish the atmosphere, you know, just relish the atmosphere, you know, and sit in the kirtans. And, you know, so what I'm saying, it makes such a difference. There's an example, person outside, family, children, work. She needs it. She goes. She gets nourished. So I do see a lot of hope, I mean, of how things are developing in what I call the mission of Prabhupada. It's phenomenal what's happening now with Gauravani, for example. We're being established on such a level now of such respect. Among the progressive people that are into Indian culture, at least in the Northeast, to a phenomenal degree. Phenomenally, I was speaking with Kasturba. It was so enlivening that, you know, Jayutal, Wah, you know, all these top kirtaneers are just accepting the authenticity and spiritual potency of the devotees. The head of Omega Institute, which is, you know, one of the key institutes for spreading, you know, for teaching in America. And I don't know how it was, but, you know, he told the head of the Yoga Journal, who has a concert, he said, you know, and said, "You see this guy, Gauravani? In 1 year, he's bigger than Krishna Das." You know? So I think the more Krishna consciousness is done in the appropriate way, and it's so enlivening when it's shared and others can appreciate it. It gives you more of the scope. It gives you a greater community of people that you can get nourished by. You go outside. I went up to Carnamrita was doing the a concert right near where I live, upstate New York, in Hudson, where Raghunath is doing a teacher training. There was probably 50 people there that came to the concert. Not bad for, you know, and I saw already myself by kind of walking in there how many people came to me already from hearing me speak, etc. And I saw how enlivened Kali Rita is, that she's established and respected in that community as a devotee, you know. So there's so many things, you know, that can nourish us. So that's the ideal, and I guess practically we have to take a veil as many of them as we can. Sometimes, sometimes you can move to a better situation. Sometimes you can't move. You have to make a better situation where you are. Sometimes you just have to deal with our karma. But, you know, I guess with the media, there's so much opportunity to hear, too. Okay, Mooney, that's my
answer. All right, well,
thanks,
Marsh. I mean, sometimes I think that there's things where the answer is not necessarily esoteric, but it helps to hear it heard or spoken in certain contexts.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was searching for an esoteric answer, but there wasn't one.
Well, I mean, yeah. So anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you want to make some comment?
Yeah, real quick.
Confucius,
he's really amazing, and he was discussing how someone who wants to attain to genuine virtue, how you have to work at it through every aspect of life. And he just said something that I thought really reminded me of a lot of what was going on in your class about Hanuman. He said when you meet someone who has good qualities, there's a kind of yoga where in all social circumstances you can better yourself. And he said when you meet someone who's better, you should think, how can I be more like them? And when you meet someone who has some bad quality or bad qualities, you should introspect and think about your own bad qualities. And it becomes a kind of yoga of interacting with people. And anyway, I just appreciate
that. Well, no, that's interesting, because I think science is there, you know, in the Yoga Sutras, again, it says when you meet someone who's better than you, you should be happy, so you become free from envy. You should be their well-wisher. So there's a lot of ways, you know, when you meet someone who's less than you, you should be compassionate. And these counteract the lower modes, the expressions of lower modes that degrade the consciousness. I do think there's a lot of practical ways of, and that's why I think that's what's beautiful about Prabhupada, you know, is that he practically discussed. He's so much knowledge of how you can actually live in the world and how you could be Krishna conscious, spiritually fit. You know, basic things, you know, that are the foundations of our consciousness, not just, you know, some meditation on the Leela of Radha and Krishna, which I'm certainly not minimizing that. But as people living an ordinary life, or even, you know, sannyasi traveling on, don't have access to the lifestyle to cultivate that, probably nor the association to do it. You know, to the extent that it's recommended in the days where, of Jiva Dharma, where, you know, the people living in the, you know, kunjas of Gojram Dweep, you know, in the association of Sattvic Sadhus, with a sublime atmosphere just nourishing their consciousness, you know, basic things are just so dynamic in changing the consciousness, just like, you know, giving up criticism. Powerful. You know, if you're really, you become just a little mindful in eating. Very, very powerful. So I think that was Prabhupada's concern in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness and the depth of rasa and philosophy, that people don't learn, you know, to maintain the basic behavioral patterns that create healthy minds and make it all possible. Okay, Mooney. I yesterday the prashad. I think I'm still reeling a little bit, so I may be a little bit more health and stone.
Health and stone. Fire. That was you're talking about how the yoga people are appreciating Krishna consciousness and people in that world. One thing that Eddie Stern has said to Kasturba is that, you know, as much as Kasturba and I sometimes criticize our own spiritual organizations, he said,
yeah,
one thing you got that hardly anybody else got was a serious commitment to ethical and like ethical practice and renunciation that has to be the basis of yoga. And he said, anybody else gets that. And so I agree with you.
Amazing, what Prabhupada did, actually.
Yeah, and I think people who know that, they really are grateful.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, Marge, one thing that I thought of when you were describing all those great projects that are going on is that those people are all people who took Prabhupada's teachings and they abstracted it from, they took them, usually they're interpreted in the context of a really small, intense religious community, like things Prabhupada said. And the people who you're describing, like Yogya and others, they're taking them and trying to understand how to apply them to a community of religious practitioners in a broader sense. And it seems to me that's why they're successful. One of the reasons. And I feel like I have to learn to abstract sometimes what Prabhupada said from, like, certain contexts in ISKCON to understand how it does apply to my life. But that's a side note. I mean, that's a longer...
No, that's important. Remember, we had that conference on Bhagavad Gita, and you know, we had all the people even giving, you know, how to make Bhagavad Gita relevant and some of the statements that turn people off and whatever case. But the conclusion was... is that those who have studied Bhagavad Gita under Prabhupada in disciplic succession in an analytical and scholarly way and applying that knowledge, they really have the real depth of knowledge of that text. And if it needs to be communicated, as especially for linking or introducing people, then they could take that knowledge and make it relevant. But it doesn't discount the potency that comes through his teachings and his chastity to the tradition as it is, you know, without adding, without subtracting, that kind of idea, it shines when you see the result of it, of people who followed it with intelligence, and then how, and the appreciation they receive when they go in other spiritual circles where it's within that circle's frame of reference to be open-minded to someone in spiritual life and can actually get to know people who follow Prabhupada's teachings. But it's so impressive. I mean, there's some people are becoming devotees upstate New York. This one lady owns a spa and this other person, because they're just seeing the quality of the people who adhere to this path. You know, so it's good. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Marge. I appreciate it.
Okay. Anybody else like to say?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hi, Bo.
This is Rasikya. My obeisances, please.
Hey, Hare Krishna. Hi.
I just wanted to add one more thing to the enthusiasm thing. I was reading the Nectar of Instruction again the other day.
Oh, great.
And in the purport of the first verse, amongst other things, Prabhupada mentions asana. And I know from my own yoga practice that I've been doing, that has really helped my japa.
So because we're
embodied and we have these material bodies, the more we do just a little basic thing to keep it sort of in shape, immediately the soul feels a little lighter.
Prabhupada said sit properly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's definitely a fact. Even when I was at, you know, even sitting a little bit so your knees are below your back, mm-hmm. you know, your spine will curve, you know, it's mechanical, but it opens up an ability to focus.
Yeah.
And definitely, I mean, I also practice a little bit just to keep myself fit. Otherwise, you're too bodily conscious when you're doing meditation.
Exactly.
And when you do the proper yoga, you cease the body kind of becomes a lack of concern. And I was there in Vrindavan, and Prajumna was telling me that Prabhupada was upset. This is way back, I remember, 20, 30 years ago. Prabhupada was upset and showed the devotees how to do push-ups. or something like that. So, yeah, no, it's a valid point. And I feel also that in the modern world is so toxic that if you want to be a meditator, and we are Japa meditators, you have to do something to counteract the toxicity. Whatever. You have to counteract it. And, you know, just bring up to even keel, you know, where... So I agree with you, Rasika. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. Who's that?
Gail.
I'm always conscious of you, by the way. Even when the phone is muted, there's a certain fear. Okay. Okay. Well. Okay. Go ahead.
No, I said Hare Krishna.
Okay. Hello, Gail. Hi, Gail. Hi, Gail. Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry, I go. You know, I just got back from Moscow. I'm going to give you a call maybe later today. I'd like to just touch base with you.
Thank you, Maharaj. I'll look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Henry. All right. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Govardhan.
Govardhan, great. You took Kanamrita back?
Yes, Maharaj, I left in Princeton.
You went all the way to Princeton, huh? Thank you.
Yeah, no.
She really appreciated that, I suppose. I'm sure. Did she get the time to spend time with your daughter?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay.
She gave her email address and phone number to call sometime.
Oh, great. That'll be inspiring for Harini. Thank you. Thanks for taking them back. That was real helpful, you know. Otherwise, it would be difficult to get her here if we didn't have that. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Haribo. Once you call the two of yourself, listen to the inner circle of the